KPCW News Time now, 8:16. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Well, the Summit County Council met yesterday. On the phone with a recap, I have Council Member Kim Carson. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So once again, you heard from some residents in Jeremy opposed to the noise wall. What does the council do when you're between a rock and a hard spot?
Well, we're between a rock and a wall on this one. You know, we keep the conversation going with UDOT. I think that's the most important thing we can do. And we're listening to constituents that have concerns on both sides. And, you know, hopefully we can mitigate the situation.
Yeah, some options, I guess, available. I mean, how feasible would it be to pursue, let's say, directing your staff to study the competing claims of the citizens against the wall versus UDOT?
You know, honestly, we just don't have the staff capacity to do that right now. Our building season is getting underway, and, you know, they're swamped with the current projects that are on the books. The only way we could do that would be to hire an outside consultant, and those funds need to come from somewhere, so it would mean, you know, looking at the project list and eliminating some.
And even if the consultant did a report, it doesn't mean that anything would change, huh?
Exactly. You know, if we thought that something may end up in changing UDOT's mind, that would be one thing. But I just think in this case, and from what we've heard from UDOT, that, you know, they are moving forward. I am going to bring a couple points forward in our next meeting with UDOT that Tom Farkas brought up last night. They're ones that we've addressed before, but we want to review those again with UDOT.
Yeah. What about the county filing a lawsuit? I mean, that's certainly another option. On what grounds? I don't know.
Well, you have to find that the way that they're implementing their policy is arbitrary and capricious, and that's a very high standard. So I don't think, I mean, council has not indicated a willingness at this point to put our tax dollars up for a lawsuit. They tend to be very long and very costly.
So when is this next meeting with UDOT?
Within the next week.
Yeah. And again, well, I mean, what's your approach going to be?
Well, at our last meeting, we were going to talk. They were working with engineers and looking at different modifications to the wall. So at this point, they're really approaching it from a mitigation standpoint. However, I will bring up two of the key points that Tom brought up last night. And one of those being those Jeremy Point residents that weren't allowed to ballot that feel like they were eligible to ballot. And then the other is measuring the pavement before and after. And does that in and of itself create enough reduction in noise to make up the difference?
Yeah. Possibility of maybe a wall with some plexiglass windows?
You know, they're not willing to do things at this point that are outside of things they haven't done before. It doesn't mean we can't bring it up. We've talked about a number of different types of walls with them, including having something that's more like railroad ties that stepped up, or that type of material where you could have each tier landscaped. And, you know, there's a lot of options being thrown around.
Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing the citizens could also bring a lawsuit if they chose to. I mean, just what, citing kind of a loss of property value?
Well, they could, but I don't know how they would prove that. We have a lot of residents in the area that are requesting a sound wall. So can you really say that would reduce your property value? You know, some would argue that it would actually improve your property value.
Okay. Let's see. The council also looked at two sales tax options for transit and whether or not you want to enact them by June 30th. Did you make a decision?
No, we have not made a decision. This was just an initial work session. There's one that they call the fourth quarter and another one that they call a fifth quarter, which is really a misnomer because it's 0.20%, not a full quarter. we just wanted to have the initial discussion and talk about some of the projects that we may be able to accomplish with those dollars, and then also what some of the challenges are.
Right. We're already raising, what, about $8 million a year? I mean, how much more money do we need if we were to tax folks?
Well, this would raise, with the fourth quarter, approximately $3.6 million. And on the fifth quarter, it would be about $3.5 million. And, you know, there's projects that could be connected to those dollars. One example, they didn't, just as far as a need for additional funding, when we're looking at the Jeremy Ranch interchange improvements, you know, we would like to get more pedestrian tunnels in that area to really make that as safe and effective as possible. And we just don't have the funds available for that right now. And we've applied for grants and unfortunately just found out that we weren't successful in getting one of those grants. So we'll go back to the drawing board.
Now, does the council decide yes or no, or does this have to go to the voters?
On these, the fourth and the fifth quarters, it is a decision of the council.
All right. And then could the tax be rescinded at some future time?
You know, I believe we can rescind it, but that was not in our staff report. But that's a good question, Leslie.
Yeah, I'm guessing. I mean, you've got $15 million a year in transportation and transit if this goes through.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that...
One of the big factors in a decision to do that would be if we did tax anticipation bonds so we could get more upfront money to do the project sooner rather than later, and then they're paid with future tax receipts. Then, of course, you couldn't do away with the tax because that's what's paying for that, making that bond payment. But one thing that's attractive about the fourth quarter is that the first year, the county would be able to keep 100% of the revenues generated through that, whereas after that point, a large portion of it goes into the 50-50 split, which is 50% point of sale and 50% is distributed via population, so a considerable amount of those dollars would then end up leaving the county.
So of that $3.6 million, how much, any estimate?
Well, the 3.6 is what we would actually realize.
Oh, okay. So you would get even more after for the first year?
For the first year, yes.
Okay.
Well, no, it's still estimated to be about 3.6, Leslie, because we couldn't implement it until at the earliest July 1st, and we would only be able to realize that for three quarters of the year, not a full year.
So I think here in Park City, that could put the sales tax rate over 10%, yeah?
From our staff report and the discussion we had last night, it was about 9%. So, you know, and that's our next step is to, I'll be reaching out to each of the municipalities and talking to them about the pros and cons. I mean, they'll see an significant increase in the funds available for transportation projects throughout the county. And then, of course, there's a significant increase to the transit funds to be able to add improvements to, you know, some of our routes and things that we'd like to implement. Mm.
I had thought Park City was already over 9% with the initiations. So it's going to be close to 10, sounds like, here in Park City, which is mm-hmm. higher tax rate. Let me see. The tax distribution can also go to Park City and the Transit District. Our Deputy County Manager Dana Young suggested the county do a memorandum of understanding with Park City to jointly plan those improvements.
Yes, we need to talk to them about how we're managing the funds that come in and the overall planning for the transit district. Well, it's not truly a transit district, and maybe that's an option to look at, you know, developing a full-on transit district. Right now it's under Park City Municipal Corporation. And that hasn't, I just want to preface that by saying it hasn't been, you know, a point of any detailed discussion at this point. But, you know, I think we're at the point of brainstorming on how we could work together
All right. Any sense which way the council was leaning on going forward with these or not?
You know, right now, I don't, personally, I am not leaning one way or another. It's exciting to think about what we could get accomplished if we had the funds, but I'm definitely sensitive to the tax rate and the impacts that could have on our citizens, and I also really want to get the input of the municipalities and their feelings on it before we move forward.
All right, and real quick, our last few minutes here, you had a legislative update with Representative Tim Quinn. Any news there?
You know, no. There were things that really we've talked about in past meetings. There wasn't a lot new. I really appreciated his offer to come and speak to us and his openness to having dialogue with us on different issues throughout the legislative session. And I hope that continues this summer in the interim because, you know, we found that's when a lot of the work gets done on upcoming bills.
Right. And with regard to the Senate Bill 191, this was with the oil and gas local authority. Have you had any indication from the oil and gas industry that they're willing to amend it, how the county would like to see it?
You know, we had a good discussion with them. It was about 3 weeks ago, and we're waiting to hear back because they were holding a meeting with some of their industry leaders in the state, and I haven't heard the outcomes from that meeting yet.
Okay.
Kim, you know, we're literally looking at one line change there.
Okay. But, anything else you wanted to mention?
You know, we did have our new district ranger for the Camas Heber office come and visit, Dano Peregi, and I just slaughtered his name, so I hope he's not listening. Everybody just calls him Dano, so we really appreciated him coming, and, you know, the governor has already issued an executive order regarding fire danger in the state, and I'm just urging everybody to be very careful as they're burning brush piles, as they're looking at going and starting their camping season, just be extremely, extremely careful. You know, this is May, and we're already having concerns about how dry it is, so it's going to be a long, hot summer as far as all indications.
Okay. I just wanted to give you a quick plug. You're going to be one of those that sits on tonight's panel that KPCW will be broadcasting with a community discussion there in the South Summit area, mental health and substance abuse. I mean, from the county's perspective, I mean, what will you be telling?
Well, it is going to be a dialogue, and I'll start my segment on just talking about why the county decided that mental wellness was a priority, and so I'll go back to how we, you know, started thinking about the need for an assessment and then getting that assessment completed, and that.
I'm sorry.
What's happening now?
Okay. All right. Kim, appreciate your time.
Sure. Thank you.
That's Summit Council Member Kim Carson. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. There are reports of aggressive techniques being used by paid canvassers attempting to get those who signed the petition to put an initiative on November's ballot allowing medical marijuana to rescind those signatures. On the phone with details, I have the Executive Director of TRUCE, that stands for Together for Responsible Use and Cannabis Education, Christine Stenquist. Good morning, Christine.
Good morning.
So, as I mentioned, TRUCE is an advocacy group that supports the Utah Medical Cannabis Initiative. What is your mission here, though?
For TRUCE, we're here for the community to educate. We're a nonprofit. We're education-based. We go out into the community and we hold events to educate those who are curious about cannabis.
Yeah. Was this organization founded to support the ballot initiative, or had it been already organized?
No, we've been around for a few years. I originally started my efforts back in 2015, working with Senator Madsen on his legislation, and I continued those efforts in 2016. We became a nonprofit in 2016, and we've just continued to educate. We do stuff here on the state level, and we also do lobbying and stuff back in D.C., just raising awareness about patients' needs to access.
Yeah. So why are you personally involved? I mean, do you have a story with regard to...
I do. I'm a brain tumor, patient. In 1996, I was diagnosed with a brain tumor, and I had surgery. During that surgery, they hit a blood vessel, and I slipped into a coma. They only removed 40% of the surgery. 40% of the tumor during the surgery. A few days later, I woke from that coma, and I had some residual effects. I had some left side paralysis. I spoke like a stroke victim. I had to learn how to walk and talk and eat again. For the next 16 years, I was bedridden because of my recovery process was slow. About 5 years ago, I hit a pain wall, and I started wasting and went to my doctor, and I told him I was curious about medical marijuana, and he informed me there was a pain clinic that could get me started on Marinol, which is a FDA-approved a synthetic THC, to help with the nausea to get that under control. When I started that therapy, I got mild relief, but the side effects from that particular drug gave me a lot of problems. And so I went searching for information on maybe how to take it, you know, do I need to take it at night, just trying to get other patients' input on that medication. Found a lot of alternative information about how cannabis was actually more beneficial in its raw plant state form than the synthetic THC I was getting from a pharmaceutical drug. So I ventured out and wanted to try this. Before I did, I called my father, who's a narcotics officer, and I asked for his opinion and his support on this. And he was very quick to give and offer support. And I procured my first bag, and that was, 5 years ago. It's done amazing things for my life. I was able to start walking again, driving again. Several months after starting to use cannabis, I found my way to Capitol Hill, and I found Senator Mattson, and that was sort of the birth of truth.
So you're basically doing whatever you shouldn't be doing here.
Yes, and I have been very open about that I do use medical cannabis illegally here, and it's the process of procuring that and trying to restore my quality of life that led me to wanting to change policy in our state, and not just through, you know, the legislative process. I wanted to find out other ways, because we've been shot down for the past 4 years trying to get some sort of legislation passed through, you know, the House and the Senate. This was the other option, was to have a ballot initiative run. So me and some other allies and another nonprofit decided we needed to move forward on this effort. There was a Utah Patients Coalition was formed. There were individuals hired to run that organization, and that the ballot initiative got dropped last June in 2017. And they've been collecting signatures ever since. And April 15th, we filed those signatures. And right now, when I looked at the website, we were at 154,000 signatures that we had. We only have a requirement of 113 signatures. Now, the tricky thing about ballot initiatives in Utah, there's a lot of requirements. You have to gather 10% of registered voters in the 26 of the 29 Senate districts. And that's a very, very heavy lift. But we accomplished that. What's going on right now is an organization, Utah Medical Association, the Eagle Forum, Sutherland Institute, and the Salt Lake City DEA Task Force have formed a PIC, and it's called Drug Safe Utah, and its sole purpose is to rescind signatures off of the ballot initiative, and really just to kind of stop the ballot initiative in its tracks. These are the same individuals that have been in opposition of our efforts for the past 4 years on the Hill. So I'm not, you know, we're not strangers to these individuals. It's just they're going to great lengths to stop the patient's efforts in trying to get access to medicine in a legal manner.
Yeah. And you have posted a video of one of these canvassers at someone's door. Was this person that answered the phone? I mean, where did the video come from? I mean, was he working with Truce or?
No. She saw a post on Facebook last week. I had started to get messages on our Facebook page last Tuesday night saying that canvassers had come to this individual's house and had asked them to rescind their signature off the medical cannabis initiative, saying that there was complications with it. The state made a mistake. They got to make the bill better. Some people were being told that smoking wasn't allowed and smoking is so important for patients and why would you sign it? They were told a lot of different things. And so I started to pass these messages on to the campaign guys and tell them, hey, something's happening. Something's going on. You guys need to check into this. So they started looking into what was going on, and we found and discovered that this PIC was formed on April 26th. It was the paperwork was filed, and this PIC had sprung up. And Utah Medical Association's CEO, Michelle McUmbar, is the person that is behind this PIC who is trying to stop the patient's initiative. And we also discovered after this video, well, we discovered a few days before the video, some training materials that were given to the campaign by canvassers, and the training material was filled with lies. And that was the first exposure of this canvassing group. Then we put out the warning on our social media, and Utah Patients Coalition put out the warning on their media, and so did the veterans group, to let people know that these shady tactics were being done. And if they had questions, to please contact the coalition or contact the Lieutenant Governor's office if you are concerned about people asking for your driver's license and your Social Security number at your door. So there was a lot of concern that was going on. And this lady, Billy, she saw this warning. And she really doesn't follow Truth. She didn't really follow the movement closely, but she did, in fact, sign the initiative. And so when somebody knocked on her door, she lives in a cul-de-sac, and in their breezeway is not really a common area for people to go and knock on the doors. So she figured what she just saw was this woman or somebody coming to get her to rescind. We started asking people to record their interactions with these canvassers because of the very concerning allegations we were hearing. We needed proof. And so she started her phone, and she started live streaming straight to Facebook her encounter. So it wasn't just a recording. It was Facebook Live. So she started Facebook Living her encounter with a woman who came to the door, and she was trying to be discreet. So all you really see is, you know, the woman's clipboard, her lanyard that identifies her of working for the Utah Medical Association, and an 11-minute-long rant about really confusing statements. She backtracks, the canvasser backtracks on why that they need her signature removed. And a lot of this is just because the opposition doesn't want cannabis in the state. They fear it's going to be a recreational program, and that's sort of the lies that they've been putting out, saying that this ballot initiative is a disguise, that it's run by a big canna, and it's going to be a recreational program.
Yeah, the video I saw, actually, the canvasser was telling the gentleman that his signature may be invalid and forged.
There's two videos out now. I thought you were referring to the first one, which was Billy. She had an 11-minute-long video of a woman talking about how her signature needed to come off. A second video just broke yesterday, and that's the one you're referencing. So my apologies in confusing the two. Yes, there's another gentleman, and in that video, he is told that a bunch of signatures have been forged in that area and wanted confirmation that he had signed it, and he says, yes, I did. Then that woman proceeds to tell him a lie, saying that, well, this initiative was put into place because they said it was for epilepsy children or epileptics to have access, and as of January this year, they do have access. That's a falsehood. That's not accurate. There's a lot of other false information that she says in that minute-and-a-half video. So we are having more people starting to record these encounters because the UMA is denying that they are having people out there lying to get people to rescind their signatures. And so we just need to show proof.
Can you legally rescind your signature?
Yes. What they are doing and asking to rescind is legal. The lying and the deceit is not legal. So that's why we need proof, and we have proof. We have their training materials, and we're starting to get videos from the public. There is going to be a case filed, and we're collecting this information because this itself is gone beyond the legal realm. This has gone to deceive the public. In the 11-minute video, the woman at that door claims to be working for the county, and that's impersonating somebody who's with the county illegally. So there's a lot of things that we're gathering information and giving on to the campaign so that they can have to file whatever suit they feel is necessary.
Yeah. And I heard that there's also a big effort to do that here in Summit County. How come?
Oh, there is. Summit County was our plus one. We wanted to make sure that we really got this initiative on the ballot. And so we went to Summit County last. That's our 27th district. And we didn't get as many signatures in that district. It wasn't our sole focus. And so they're trying to hit districts that have lower numbers. So they went to Washington County first in the St. George area. That's where a lot of this, the videos are starting to circulate. That was the first place they hit. That's where we got the training material. Now we saw that the Utah Medical Association has put up an ad for canvassers up in Summit County, up in Cache, and in Davis. So we're trying to alert those communities that you may be approached with individuals who are not being completely honest in why they are at your doorstep. And they're approaching individuals who signed this. So we know it's the supporters who are behind us. We just encourage those, if they feel like they have been approached and have been misled, to resend their signature, you can contact Utah Patients Coalition. Ask for Alex. He is the campaign manager. He will make sure to get your signature back on the ballot.
Okay, I've got to leave. I need to leave it there, Christine. Thanks for your time this morning.
You betcha.
Christine Stenquist, again, the executive director of the group Truce. KPCW News Time now, 8:44. Good morning. Well, May isn't only Mental Health Awareness Month. It's also Maternal Mental Health Awareness Month. In the studio to tell us more about here in Utah, about the rates of mental maternal depression and anxiety, is Sarah Caldwell, a mental health therapist. Good morning.
Good morning.
So is there a difference between maternal depression and depression?
There is, yes. And what we've known in the field for a long time in the maternal mental health specialist field is that there's a huge difference in the biology and how it presents. Then you have this major life transition that is not always there with general depression or anxiety.
Yeah. And it comes about prior to or during pregnancy and after?
Yeah, so it can show up during pregnancy and then in the weeks, months, and even years postpartum.
Hmm. So I had heard that 1 in 7 moms experiences anxiety and depression nationally, and there's a higher rate of that in Utah?
There is. And so if you think about how many women are delivering babies each year, it translates to a huge number of women in Utah and in our community.
Yeah. So are we just talking postpartum depression, or is it there's also an anxiety issue as well?
Yeah, so that's one of the common misconceptions, is that it's just depression, but it's anxiety, it's post-traumatic stress disorder, obsessive-compulsive disorder, and then the more severe is psychosis. Hmm. But we see depression and anxiety most often.
Yeah, so what are the warning signs then for the maternal issues?
Sure, so it is not being able to sleep or rest, feeling disconnected from either yourself, your friends, your baby, high levels of anxiety, sadness. And then a really common one that most people don't realize is that people feel postpartum rage. So a lot of anger issues. And that can be really surprising for a lot of women who maybe haven't experienced that before. And it doesn't look like what we think depression looks like. And so they might not come in for help, even though that rage is so uncomfortable and so distressing.
Now, medication is a common therapy for anyone suffering from anxiety or depression. I mean, is that what we want to do, though, for a woman who's pregnant or breastfeeding?
Yeah, so another common misconception is that medications are always dangerous, but it's really a cost-benefit analysis between the woman and her providers about which is going to be more detrimental, that high level of depression or anxiety and the distress that goes along with that, and then all the cortisol and the body reactions that go along with those diagnoses, or the potential side effects of a medication.
So in addition to medication, what other therapies or healing therapies are out there?
Sure. So there is, we have a lot of maternal mental health specialists, psychotherapists in Utah. So at the Healing Group, which is where I work, we are all specialists in treating maternal mental health issues. And then there are a lot of support groups, both in person and online. And you can find out information about those at Postpartum Support International. And then we have a walking group here in Park City that's really there to help moms connect with other women, support each other, get fresh air and sunshine. And something we always do at the Healing Group is wellness planning. So that's something that, you know, we focus so much on planning for the birth and for the pregnancy, and then there's this desert in the postpartum period.
Yeah. So this walking group for new moms, is it free?
It is. So it's free. We meet every week, every Wednesday at 10 a.m. at Willow Creek Park. And that's for women who are pregnant or postpartum, and they can bring their kiddos up to 2 years old. And we walk, we talk, we get fresh air and sunshine, all those things that really have evidence-based been shown to help either reduce the risk of developing postpartum depression or anxiety, and can also help alleviate symptoms if someone is experiencing them.
Yeah. So how many people do you usually get to show up?
So we just started it. So we're a little, you know, we're new, but, you know, hoping to get as many women as possible. You know, the more the merrier.
All right. And you're there for an hour, 45 minutes?
Yeah, for an hour. We'll walk at an easy pace. You know, if you're pushing 9 months pregnant, we're going to take it at your pace. And or if you've got a little one, you know, strapped to you. So it's, we'll walk for about 45 minutes to 50 minutes, and I'll be there to kind of answer any questions, get people talking, make people feel comfortable.
All right. So you just do it as a community service then, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love, you know, I'm a social worker, so that's my background. I do provide therapy and couple support, but I also love to be able to offer something free that anyone can come to if they're feeling like they want to connect with other moms.
Right. All right. If people would like more information about any of this, is there a place to go online?
Yep. So the easiest way is going to be to go to thehealinggroup.com. You can also connect with me by emailing me at Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, at thehealinggroup.com. And then I also post a lot of what I'm up to in the community at my Instagram, which is Therapy Book Club.
Okay. Sarah, hey, thanks for your
time
this morning.
Great. Thank you so much.
Sarah Caldwell, again, a mental health. It's 8:51 now. Good morning. Well, in the studio with an update from the Youth Sports Alliance, I have Executive Director Emily Fisher, along with one of the athlete scholarship beneficiaries, Ryan McElman. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Emily, you've got an update on the Stein Erickson YSA Opportunity and Endowment. Again, this is just, it was an effort to raise the $2 million as the endowment and then using the annual proceeds for scholarships?
Yep, exactly. So we reached that endowment goal of $2 million, and now we get to have the benefits of that, and we award scholarships in September and then again in March for our scholarship recipients, and Ryan is one of those recipients that has benefited from the Stein Erickson Endowment.
All right. Well, congratulations on that. Let's just talk money, though, first before we move. So how much did you hand out in March?
So, you know, March, I'm going to have to think about, but the total for the year was $115,000. So that's definitely a big uptick from a year's prior, and that's thanks to the endowment.
Yeah. I mean, and we're talking actually when things started handed out, it was like 7 years ago, I'm reading here, handing out about $15,000 with 17 scholarships. Today, we're talking about $115,000 with more like 123
yes,
scholarships.
Yes, exactly. And I think that the real difference is that now we can make a significant contribution to those athletes and to their training and competition costs. In the past, we would have athletes who are doing major things nationally and internationally, and we could give them maybe $250. And now we can give, you know, almost half of what they're asking, which is just going to make a significant difference and really make a difference in their training and competition.
And that's all attributable to the endowment fund then, huh?
Yeah. And we still, we do a paddle raise at Jan's Winter Welcome, and that contributes to the scholarships as well. But just to have that endowment and it, the last couple of years has obviously been profitable in the market. And so we've been able to put aside the next 3 years of scholarship money. And so we know that we have that those funds available regardless of what happens with the market. And hopefully we can just continue to grow that while we have those 3 years secured.
All right. So, Ryan, was this your first scholarship from YSA? Or
No, I'd say I've been receiving scholarships from them for about the past 4 or 5 years. And like she said, the past 3 or 4 years have been slightly smaller than the this year, and thanks to the Stein Erickson, this year's was very, very significant, and it helped me more than I can imagine. Pretty much, I got that in the mail that day, and I was speechless. It helped make dreams come true, and it really is really gives you that extra push to get to the next level in what you're doing. And it helps my parents a ton, helps me a ton. Just, you know, when you're over there, you don't want to be thinking about money when you're doing the training thing, and it really helps to be at the top of a course and just know that this isn't putting your parents in the poorhouse, basically, that you have some big, big support behind you, and it's really helpful, and I can't say thank you enough to YSA. They've really made dreams come true.
Yeah, well, you're hoping to make it to the U.S. ski team. How far out of the mix are you there? I mean, somebody told me you were ranked 59th in the world. That's pretty darn good.
Yeah. So this year I ended up ranked 59th in the world in the World Cups, which was I had a little bit of trouble in the World Cups this year. It was my first year on them, and pretty much the only preseason training we had was the Europe camp that we went to for 2 weeks. And then due to the lack of snow this year, we didn't get much preparation before those contests. So I had the biggest opportunities of my life, and I wasn't able to fully capitalize on them just because of the lack of training. And hopefully next year I'll be able to end up higher in that ranking. I think I ended 18th overall in the world in overall ranking. So that's half pipe, slope style, big air, all those combined. But in slope style, I really want to be gunning for some higher results next year, make some finals, hopefully get in the top 10s in World Cups, and try to keep pushing this dream, try to keep making it come true.
Yeah.
And I think one of the important things to mention, too, is for those intermountain skiers, we also, this year, we partnered, the Stein Erickson Endowment partnered with the Sam Jackenthal Fund. And so the Sam Jackenthal Fund was able to have a matching grant for all of those intermountain skiers. And that was just a significant contribution and a wonderful legacy for Sam.
Yeah, huge, huge thank you to Sam and Ron and everything and Jen and all that family's done. Honestly, like, as tragic as that incident was, it's been a huge motivating factor to everyone in the community. And I think there's tons of skiers that are skiing better than they ever have with that extra push from Sam behind them. They're just feeling like you got someone watching over their shoulder. And thank you to that family, and thank you to everything they've done.
Yeah, so you ski with whom? I mean, are you on the development team with U.S. Skiing or no?
Nope, I actually ski for Team Park City, just PC free ski. And in a way, they're basically the development team for the U.S. team, because there's a rookie team, but they can only take so many spots onto the U.S. team. And almost everyone that they choose either comes from like one or two schools back east or the Park City team for the U.S. ski teams. So the coaching has been great. I ski with Chris Haslock is our head coach, who's unbelievable. He's awesome. He's a legend in the community. And Dave Euler has been my head coach for the past 6 years, but he actually just got nominated to be the coach for the U.S. rookie team. So Ryan Weibel and Corey Jackson, those guys are going to be my coaches this year probably.
All right, so is this a full-time job for you now?
Yeah, essentially a full-time job. Everyone, I moved from the East Coast 5 years ago, and I just went back, and everyone kind of just, no one understands back there. Everyone thinks I'm just a ski bum. Everyone thinks I'm a ski bum and a bike bum. But the people don't realize that you're in the gym 4 to 5 days a week when you're not skiing. And then when you're skiing 5 to 6 days a week, and pretty much the only time you're not on your skis and trying to learn as much as you can and practice as much as you can is when you're on a plane to go somewhere else. So the whole winter, you're working your butt off, and you're in the gym whenever you can be. You're on the mountain doing everything you can. And then whenever the season ends, you pretty much just start working towards the next season. All summer, we train on the airbag up the Olympic Park and spend time in the gym. So it's a full-time job, pretty much. I get to have I race downhill mountain bikes in the summer, too, so that's a nice little adrenaline fix outside of skiing. But kind of keeps it balanced. I think you gotta have a little bit of a side hobby to do, otherwise you get burnt out. So it's nice to change it up and get on some wheels and dirt in the summer instead of snow.
Okay, well, good luck to you. Be careful.
Thank you.
Emily, wanted to mention real quickly a golf tournament coming up.
Yes, so our next fundraiser is the 4th annual YSA golf tournament, and that's coming up on June 4th. And we will be playing at Victory Ranch, which is always just a lovely place and a lovely time. So we have, I think, 8 team slots available, and we have some sponsorships available and prizes we need for the golf tournament. So if anybody's interested in having a team or sponsoring the tournament, they can go to ysaparkcity.org.
Okay. Emily, Ryan, thanks for your time.
Thank you.